Jewish audio on Kabad.org.
Tonight's topic, as you will see, based or rooted in this week's Torah portion, is the mystical meal eaten at the conclusion of the Sabbath of Shabbat, referred to as the Melava Malka. Melava Malka means to accompany the king or queen, depending on how you spell it. And the queen in reference here is the divine presence or the Sabbath itself. The subject matter here is the source. What is the ultimate source of this custom to eat this meal at the conclusion of the Shabbos? In order to understand the source and therefore the meaning also of this meal, we first need to look at the origin or source of the meals eaten on the Sabbath proper. On Shabbat, we are enjoined to eat three meals. The first meal Friday night, the second meal Shabbat morning. Nowadays we tend to eat it in the afternoon, because when I say nowadays, I'm referring to post-temple. That's quite a long nowadays. It's 1900 years of nowadays. Since there is no longer the temple in Jerusalem, God willing, to be built imminently, we spend the morning in shul, largely because the prayers are in lieu of the service in the temple, and hence our first meal is after the morning prayers, and for most people that would be already after midday. What I'm saying is that initially that second Shabbat meal would well nigh be in the morning. So, a second meal, and then a third meal that is eaten, and nowadays again, this tends to be eaten just before the mincha service on Shabbos afternoon, and it's called, well, its formal name is Su'uda Shlishit, or Su'uda Shlishit, the third meal. It's known in the Yiddish-speaking circles as Shalosh Su'udas, which is a kind of adaption, in a sense, of the two words Shalosh Su'udot, three meals. This is the third meal. And it's generally eaten in the synagogue after Mincha, between Mincha and Maariv, the evening service, which already belongs to Saturday night or Sunday. Now, what's the origin of eating these three meals? Because in this week's Parsha, the story of the manna. So the manna falls, and to their surprise, the surprise of the Jewish people, a double portion falls on Friday. And they weren't prepared or warned of this phenomenon, and they wonder why a double portion of manna falls from heaven on Friday. And Moshe Rabbeinu explains, because tomorrow is Shabbos, and today, therefore, double portion falls for today and tomorrow. For no manna will fall on Shabbos, and no manna will fall on Shabbos because that would necessitate, or that would mean transgressing one of the commandments of Shabbos, which they were now being told about, and that is to carry from an open, undisclosed area to a private domain, like a tent or a home, carrying the manna into their home, which we don't do on Shabbos. We don't carry from the enclosed area to an open area, or vice versa, an open public area, as it were, to a closed private area. Although the issue not here is not ownership, but other factors. At any rate, and that's why Moshe goes on to explain, a double portion fell today, one for today, one for tomorrow. Now, in so explaining, that critical verse mentions, which describes Moshe Rabbeinu explaining this to the Jewish people, the word today appears three times in the same verse. It Right? He actually addressed this to them on Shabbos. It wasn't on Friday, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. It was on Shabbos. No manna fell on Shabbos. He explains to them a double portion fell on Friday, and you will eat it. You'll eat that portion today. And in that verse, he says, here's the quote, and Moshe says to them, eat it today, for it is Shabbos today unto God. Today you will not find the manna in the field, in the open area. You noticed? No, they were first commanded to observe Shabbat here and now, yeah, post-Exodus. Just before the giving of the Torah, some short time before. So since he mentions today three times, that's the origin of the three meals we eat on Shabbat. Incidentally, this is the reason the manna in general, the manna, the double portion that falls on Friday for Shabbos, is the reason that when we sit down to a Shabbat meal, and by extension, all Yom Tov meals, there are two breads or two challahs that begin the meal proper, and that we call the double portion that falls on Friday for Friday and Shabbat. And it's also one of the reasons that the custom is that the breads are covered. Actually, they're placed on a plate or a board, and then covered. The reason for the covering, the basic reason why the challahs are covered, since we speak of the subject, is because the halach is, the law is, when you sit down to a meal, there is literally a pecking order, or an eating order. There is an order of which foods you eat first, and that's determined by the prestige or importance or significance of the food. Bread reigns supreme. So we eat bread at the outset. In fact, bread is so all-encompassing that when one washes and partakes or breaks of bread and makes the appropriate blessing, that covers all of the foods virtually, almost, to be eaten in the course of the meal as part of the meal, as opposed to a fruit compote or the like, which we eat not to satisfy hunger but to wash down the meal. That would require another blessing. But all foods eaten in the course of the meal are covered by the bread, because bread is the staff of life. And normally would be the first thing we eat at any meal. Then we would drink wine or other beverages. But on Friday night, or any Yom Tov, for that matter, Shabbos day and Yom Tov day, the meal begins not with the eating of bread, but with a declaration, declaring the sanctity of the day. And that is done over wine, because it's a joyous day. Bottom line is, we are partaking or imbibing of the wine before the bread, and hence the bread is covered, so as not to, as it were, insult the bread, because we are ignoring it when by right the bread should be eaten first. Of course, the obvious lesson is, if we're sensitive to the quote-unquote feeling or sensitivity of the inanimate, the bread, how much more so the feelings of our fellow human beings. That's the reason why it's covered. But I mentioned that the manna, rather the challah, the custom is not only to cover it, actually it's a law that it be covered, but the challah is also placed, the two breads are placed, and they should be whole, mind you, not cut, placed on a board or a plate. And the reason, because the manna, the Torah tells us, our sages tell us, fell in the following manner: a layer of dew, manna, and a second layer of dew, sealing the manna and its freshness in. To recall, therefore, the layer of dew below and above the board and the covering. An additional reason for the covering, certainly the reason to explain that the board below or the plate below. Anyway, thus far for the eating of manna, for the eating of the three meals. But what of, again, the Mlava Malka, the meal that is eaten at the conclusion of the Sabbath? Now, we shall revisit the manna presently, but it may be suggested, the Rebbe suggests here a suggested source, which we are going to reject as a source, as being unsatisfactory. And that is as follows. One might think that the origin of the Mlava Malka is this. The Talmud declares that a person should have his table set before the onset of Shabbos, and also have the table set at the conclusion of Shabbos. So there seems to be the source. The source of the Talmud, not scriptural. It's a Talmudic source, and it has to do, it's part of the general instruction vis-a-vis that relates to both pre-Shabbos and post-Shabbos. So perhaps that's the origin. This simple statement, it's not scriptural, but Talmudic, and therefore very primary and classic, a classic source. And the Talmud, in fact, mentions sages that would eat them, love a malka, and prepare an elaborate meal, but only often partake of a small part of it, but they would still make an elaborate meal. That might simply be our primal original address of this law slash custom. But the Rebbe rejects this as the origin or the source for eating the Mlava Malka, because we speak here not of eating a meal, but preparing a table, which is another matter altogether. Let's understand this. Why is the table prepared before Shabbos? One could, at the onset of Shabbos, take out the dishes, put them on the table, and begin the Shabbos meal. But that would not be an expression of honor. Quite simply, when your guest arrives, especially in this case, it's the Sabbath queen, the Shekhinah, or the king, different dimensions to Shabbos. So we, in deference to the divine guest, our table is prepared before. The emphasis here is not a meal, but the preparation of the set table. Likewise, the set table at the conclusion of Shabbos is not so much a meal, but merely an act of deference. As our guest departs, there's a gesture acknowledging the departure of our esteemed guest, and that is the orderly or set table. So it isn't a matter of eating a meal. Specifically, clearly it's not a matter of eating a meal when we consider the following. There are two general mitzvahs on Shabbos. One is to honor it and one is to delight in it. Now, honoring it includes the set table and Shabbos candles. Delighting includes a meal. This isn't part of the delighting in Shabbos. The Talmud says you set your table before and you set your table after Shabbos. It's all in the context of kavod, honor, not food. So this can't explain the custom of eating a meal. And particularly when we look at the wording of the Code of Jewish Law, the emphasis there when speaking of the Mlava Malka is not so much the set table, but the meal, the Seuda. So what's the origin of the meal? To sit down to a meal and actually eat. We still need to find a source for that. It's not this Talmudic statement. It's related. That's the honor of Sabbath. And if you're setting a table, then eat something too. But the emphasis is not in the setting of the table on Matzoi Shabbat. The emphasis is not the meal, which simply means that after Shabbos, even if we're not eating the Mlava Malka, there should be a white tablecloth and candles burning. The table is set. That's the honor of the Sabbath, honoring her as she leaves. But we're still left wanting with the need to find the source for the actual meal. Clear? That's our simple question that remains. Now, there is a statement in the Kabbalah, the Arizal, the famed Arizal, the founder of contemporary Kabbalah, by Yitzhak Luria, who lived in Tzvat, right, some 400 years ago, writes as follows. Everybody knows that on Shabbos, a Jew is endowed with the Neshama Yetera, or Neshama Yesera, which means an extra soul. That's the reason, by the way, why at the Havdalah service at the end of Shabbat, we inhale spices. Because spices have the effect of reviving the individual. It summons forth the soul, spices. Hence, since on Matzoi Shabbat, at the conclusion of Shabbos, the extra soul leaves, the Jew finds himself in a faintful state, fainteth. And thus, we smell deeply, inhale of the spices, to summon forth our soul, that it fill the gap, as it were, the void left by the departure of the Sabbath soul. So the Arizal writes that this soul doesn't really depart until the conclusion of the Mlava Malka meal. And therefore, he says one should avoid engaging in weekday activities, work, even though the Sabbath is formally over, until after the Mlava Malka, to curtail it, to limit it. Because literally the spirit of Shabbos, as in the Neshama Yesedah, Neshama Yeterah, the extra soul, has not left till after the meal. The question is why? Surely when Shabbos is over, Shabbos is over. If the halacha says, and the halacha does declares, and it's a black and white matter, that when Shabbos is over, then all manners of work may be done. There is, in fact, no longer the sanctity of Shabbos, then in what sense or why does this Shabbat soul still linger?
Is it saying that she after Shabbat?
This is Mlava Malka. Oh. We're talking the fourth meal.
The fourth meal.
Not Shabbat. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, fourth meal. So our question is, why is the Sabbath soul lingering till after this, well, in some sense, fourth meal, but it isn't a fourth meal because we're having it when Shabbos is clearly and absolutely over. Well, if it's over, it's over. In what sense does it remain? Or why, to rephrase that, why does the extra soul remain and linger till after the meal? Moreover, the question is, this whole notion of accompanying the queen or the Sabbath, how are we to understand this notion of accompanying the Sabbath as it leaves? Rashi, in his commentary in the Talmud, it talks about the using the model of a king who leaves, who visits the city, and then when he leaves the city, so the people accompany him, so there's a transitional period. He leaves, but doesn't leave immediately. There's the process by which he leaves the city. He certainly leaves the home or the palace that he had occupied in one moment when he crosses the threshold. But there is a process of leaving the city that people accompany him. So physically we can understand that leaving is a process. But Shabbos, there's no process, surely. When Shabbos is over, it's over. So what are we accompanying? Shabbos is gone. It's not Shabbos. We go from the sacred day to the weekday. So it's really the same question. This whole notion of Malava Malka accompanying the queen or the king. What does this mean? What is this transition period? This is the enigmatic transition period we're trying to understand. And once we unravel its secret, we'll understand the significance or the reason why we eat a meal after Shabbat and why the soul still lingers till after that meal. So, the explanation, dear friends, is as follows. And this brings us back to the manna and links us to the meals on the Sabbath proper. How so? Everybody knows that in Judaism, in general, night precedes day. Right? Shabbos begins the night before, Friday night, and every Yom Tov, every event. And the reason for that is because that's a reflection of the order of creation. Vayere vayivoka, the Torah tells us, it was evening, it was morn, or morning, one day, and likewise the second day, and the third day, day two, day three, day four, and so on. There are a number of exceptions to that rule. Namely, where night follows day. And one of those exceptions is the manna itself. The manna provided for 24-hour, it provided sustenance for 24 hours. When did the manna fall in the desert? It fell every morning. They'd find it outside the camp. So it sustained them till when? Till the next morning. It met, which means that the manna sustain them for their meal or meals during the day, however they would choose to divide it, as well as the evening meal. So when it comes to manna, night does not precede day, but night follows day. That means, therefore, when we think about it, the double portion of manna, the second portion of manna that fell on Friday, right? So let's walk this through. Let's walk this through from the beginning. Two portions fall. One portion for Friday and one for Shabbos. Right? Two portions fall on Friday. One for Friday. Yeah, one for, that's right. One for Friday, one for Shabbos. Again, that's why they're two challahs. So when are they consuming, when are they eating, partaking of this manna? The first portion they partake of Friday and Friday night. Because that's what the manna, that's what it needs to provide for. Manna provides for 24 hours from morn till morning. Right? So they ate part of the first portion of manna that fell on Friday as their first Sabbath meal Friday night. Clear? Like they ate, as they ate of the manna every other day of the week. It lasted them for that day, where they ate one, two, or three meals, but there was enough. And for supper, for dinner that night. The second portion of manna, so now that sustains them also for Shabbos day and Matzoi Shabbos. Shabbos night, as all manna sustains them for the night. Now true, on this particular day, they are enjoined to eat two meals. In other words, every other day, they could have one big meal during the day. I'm talking about the day now, right now. If they choose on Friday or Thursday or Wednesday or Tuesday or Monday or Sunday, you can have 10 meals during the day or one big one. On Shabbos, they had to have two. They divide it into at least two meals, but there would also be clearly enough also to eat a third meal, but this time after Shabbos. Lo and behold, the Rebbe is brilliant and simple. Discovery or observation that in the desert they ate on Saturday night after Shabbos of the manna that fell in honor of Shabbos. And that, the Rebbe explains, is the origin for eating a meal, not just arranging the table, which is a matter of honor. This is a matter of a meal. We're actually commemorating, as it were, the manna, which sustained them during the Sabbath of their sojourn in the desert and after the Sabbath. Clear? So, we have essentially our answer. What's the source for eating a meal on Saturday night? Answer, it recalls the Shabbos manna. Or the manna that fell in honor of Shabbos on Friday that sustained them for Shabbos day and obviously, clearly, for post-Shabbos Saturday night. So what emerges is this. Our sages state the following. We say every Friday night in the Kiddush, this is from Scripture, that God's Vayvorech Elokim es Yom HaShvi'i Vayekadesh Oisoi. God blessed the seventh day and He sanctified it. This is part of the quote from Scripture that we incorporate in our Kiddush Friday night. So our sages note what is meant by He blessed and He sanctified. He blessed the Shabbos because how? By a double portion of manna falling on Friday. How did He sanctify Shabbos? Because no manna fell on Shabbos. Yeah? Now on the face of it, a superficial understanding of this statement of our sages is simply the positive and the negative. It's both the blessing and the sanctifying, the bracha and the kedusha, both revolve around the manna. The bracha is the fact that manna falls on Friday, and the sanctity is that no manna falls on Shabbos. The positive and the negative, yeah? But the Rebbe said it's not merely positive and negative. Actually, there are two different components of Shabbos. Let's begin with the sanctity of Shabbos. Everybody understands that the sanctity of Shabbos begins with candle lighting And it ends when? Saturday night, when the clock ticks, the Shabbos is over. In the time, in the interim time, it's a sanctified, sacred day. There's an absolute moment when it begins, and a moment of absoluteness. No such word. An absolute moment when it ends. That's the Kedusha. That's the sanctity. No manna falls on Shabbos, because that would be in violation of the sanctity of Shabbos that begins when Shabbos begins and ends when Shabbos ends. Ah, but the blessing of Shabbos begins both before Shabbos and extends after Shabbos. The manna falls before Friday morning, the extra portion. And mind you, even the Friday portion of manna, the Friday night portion, is the Friday night meal, is from the manna that fell Friday morning. And certainly that we're going to eat Shabbos day comes to us when? Way before Shabbos has begun, Friday morning. The blessing of Shabbos begins on Friday. And the blessing of Shabbos extends beyond the conclusion of Shabbos, because the food sustained them. There was enough food for the meals on Shabbos and for the meal at the conclusion of Shabbos. So the sanctity is indeed only Shabbos proper, but the blessing of Shabbos is Friday before and Matzoy Shabbos after Shabbos. So the manna, which is the blessing of Shabbos, the bracha of Shabbos, begins before Shabbos and lingers after Shabbos. And the manifestation of that is the blessing of Shabbos manifests in the manna of Shabbos. And now we understand, first of all, we eat this meal. We already understood that, because it recalls the manna that fell on Friday, in honor of Shabbat, that extended into Matzoy Shabbat, into Saturday night. But now, we are given a deeper appreciation. It's the blessing of Shabbos that we are tasting now. The sanctity is gone, but not the blessing. And that's the reason we now understand why the Arizal says that one should refrain from work, or curtail work, till one has eaten of the meal, because the extra soul hasn't left. Why hasn't the soul left? Shabbos has. Because the blessing of Shabbos has not. Sanctity. The defined, almost harsh, in a sense. Sanctity of Shabbat is over the moment Shabbat is over. But the bracha of Shabbos extends. And hence the soul remains. The soul cannot and does not seek to depart as long as the blessing of Shabbos is still there, and wishes to be part of it. And how are we part of it? By eating a meal at this moment, which is a reflection of the manna that falls on Shabbos, on Friday, in honor of Shabbos, extending into Matzoy Shabbos. Clear? Yep. Final word. I'll tell you this, my dear friends. We are a few days before the great and awesome day of the 10th of Shvat and the 11th of Shvat, which is this Friday and Shabbos. Let me remind you that Shabbos afternoon will be a Fabrengen at the third meal. A Fabrengen, third meal of Shabbos, not in honor of these days. Why do I say these days? Because the 10th of Shvat, 62 years ago, the previous Rebbe passed away. And simultaneously, it marks the day when our Rebbe begins, ascends, as it were, assumes the mantle of leadership. The reality is that he assumed it only a year and a day later. On the 11th of Shvat, we explained once before, it was the 11th day of the 11th month of the 11th year, 5711. And if I'm not mistaken, the Maimer that the Rebbe said, the discourse, which was the sign that he was accepting the leadership, was around 11 o'clock. This has to be ascertained, I'm almost sure. We're not going to explain now the significance of the number 11, but anyway, as Rebbe was born on the 11th of Nisan, the number 11 is the number that is the symbol, as it were, reflects or expresses our generation. The number 10, the previous generation. At any rate, be it as it may, so this Shabbos we're having a Fabreng, it's exactly the 11th day of Shavat, in honor of the Rebbe's leadership and the privilege to be in his generation, the seventh generation, the generation that's going to end the exile. So, what all this to say that the Rebbe was not didn't eat a lot. He never ate, never washed and ate bread during the week. The only meal he ate actually was at night supper, most nights with the Rebbetzin and his wife, which she prepared for him. As for the course of the day, he subsisted primarily on coffee and chocolate. High dark chocolate, high cocoa density, which we now know is very it's good for energy and what have you. And cake, apparently, that was it. But there was one meal during the week that he did wash and eat formally, and that was the meal, the Mlava Malka meal. The Mlava Malka meal at the conclusion of Shabbos. Moreover, there were many times that the Rebbe didn't, and neither did the Chassidim, eat a formal meal, washing, eating bread on Shabbos day. Because in the winter, short day, and there was very often a Fabrengen, and Fabrengen went all the way till the conclusion of Shabbos. And so there was no, you make Kiddush, of course, but the formal washing and eating of bread, not necessarily. But even in those occasions, after Shabbat, the Rebbe would eat a meal. This was very special. And the Rebbetzin said, I was told, or I heard, that there are two times that my husband can't be disturbed, or I wouldn't disturb him. That's before Shabbos and after Shabbos. And she said, that's when he's with my father-in-law. In a sense, he was always with him, but this somehow was a special, unique time of communication or bonding or connection. So the significance of this Saturday night meal will now become clearer. We'll appreciate it more and understand perhaps why it was so precious to the Rebbe for the following reason. Our sages tell us as follows. Just from the source of this. Brought down by the codifier, the Rish Yosef, it seems. Okay, one of the great authorities of Jewish law. He writes as follows. There is a certain bone in the body. It's called the Etzem Luz. Etzem means a bone, and Luz is the name of the bone. Luz actually means a nut. But imagine, because it's small like a nut and hard like a nut. In fact, not only is it hard, it's indestructible. And to be found at the top of the spine, in the spinal cord. It's a small, little, rock-like bone. I told you this, that years ago we had a speaker in the old MPC before we moved here, Rabbi Nissen Mangel. Nissen Mangel is a graduate of Auschwitz. He's a teenager in Auschwitz. He was here years ago and he spoke for us. If you were gone, if you were here. Anyway, he, as a teenager, at one time, it was his task to remove the ashes from the crematoria. Imagine. It was all white ash. And he was a yeshiva student. He learned in yeshiva in Hungary. And he said, with his own hands, he saw these tiny little pebble-like bones that even the crematoria, the gas chambers in the crematoria could not destroy. Now, our sages tell us further that after Mashiach comes, when all souls will come back into their respective bodies and the bodies reconstituted, resurrected, Tchiyas HaMesim, the ultimate tenet or article of our faith. So the body is resurrected from this very bone. Mind you, again, thanks to modern science, this notion is not as fantastic as it was in matter of pure transcendent faith, because we now know, A, nothing disappears, things just break down. So the tiny particles that make up the body are out there, just got to come back together. But moreover, every part of the body is a reflection of the entire body. It's all encoded there. At any rate, so this bone does not take nourishment from any food that a person eats, except the meal eaten in Lava Malka meal. It's the only meal that nourishes it. Furthermore, the Kabbalah writes, since this bone does not accept nourishment by food, any meal, except for the meal Saturday night, that's why when Adam and Eve partook of the forbidden food in the Garden of Eden, it corrupted the body, so the body then falls sway to decay and death. But since that bone did not partake of the original forbidden food, that bone remains essentially eternal. That's why it doesn't destroy; it can never be destroyed. In other words, really, the body is essentially eternal. Death is an aberration. But that was death was acquired, as it were, through the transgression. So the whole body becomes tainted through the food that was eaten, because the body is nourished by food, all of it except for this bone. Therefore the bone remains eternal. Retained the eternal quality that the body essentially has. It's never lost on this bone. Fine. But the question is, why is it nourished? If it doesn't need food, why is it nourished by the meal, by the Saturday night Lava Malka meal? Why is that the meal, the only meal that does nourish it? And the answer is, in the Garden of Eden, in theory, it wasn't meant to be, but in theory, had Adam and Eve been loyal to God's command and not partaken of the forbidden fruit, which was, by the way, three things, the forbidden fruit. It was three things. It was wine, wheat, and fig. It was supposed to be their first Shabbos meal. They were created Friday afternoon. It was all a matter of 3 hours of containing themselves. Had they contained themselves and not eaten of it, partaken of it, then they would have partaken of it then in paradise, and that would have been the Messianic era, then and there forever. Not meant to be by God's intent too, because that would have been a very shallow Messianic era. And so the paradox of the fall from grace, banishment from Eden, descent, exile, even sin, because ultimately all this leads to a much infinitely deeper and richer paradise when finally achieved through our effort, through our dogged effort, which includes error, transgression, and even violation and betrayal, temporarily. Because it's followed by the forgiveness and the tshuva and the reconnection that is immeasurably deeper than the connection would have been, never being tested, or, yes, tested in a sense, by separation. So they were a little premature. They ate of it too early and set the stage for exile and so on, which again, as we just said, will lead to the ultimate reconciliation. So here's the thing. Shabbos indeed, Shabbos is a foretaste of the world to come. It's a foretaste of the Messianic era. It's a taste of paradise every week, a taste of the future, eternal peace. But Shabbos remains essentially disconnected from the reality of exile on the weekday. The enigmatic an incredible cosmic function and role of the Saturday night meal is to serve as the bridge between the transcendent Shabbos and the profane, the weekday, outside paradise. And that's why this bone is nourished from this meal alone, because it is this meal that reflects the whole purpose, the bringing of sanctity into the weekday. Evolving the world into the ultimate Shabbos, when the eternity of the body will then be revealed once again, as reflected by this bone. In simple language, when Mashiach comes, eternal life, eternal physical life. What's the Messianic era? When heaven suffuses earth, when paradise extends beyond paradise to embrace all of creation. What is the function of the Saturday night meal of Lava Malka? The link, the bridge. It's the time of the blessing of Shabbos, which goes beyond even the sanctity. The blessing, the word bracha actually means to come down, to embrace, to extend. This meal brings Shabbos to the weekday. This meal is the meal, in fact, it's called Sudasa, the David Malka Mashiach. Kabbalistically, it's a meal associated with Mashiach, with King David, the forerunner of Mashiach. Because the Messianic year is that, just that. All of life becoming Sabbath. Yom Shekuli Shabbos. And that's the bridge. Therefore, the bone is nourished by this meal. For even more than the Sabbath itself, this meal reflects and is the embodiment of the Messianic era. Sanctity on earth, eternally. Eternal Shabbos. Clear? And therefore we can appreciate why, perhaps, this was a meal that the Rebbe would not compromise.
Is there any tradition of what to eat?
We'll get to at the end. Well, I'll say it now then.
Okay.
It's a simple fare, generally, because we've tended to eat it our third meal not long before. But the Shulchan Aruch, the code mentions, I mean, even if it can be an elaborate meal, but traditionally it's fairly simple. It's candles burning, challah, cooked potato, some herring, leftovers from the Shabbos meal.
But
certainly,
you don't cook for this meal.
You don't have to. Well, if you do, something simple. But it certainly doesn't have to be cooked, especially for this meal.
Right.
On the contrary, you're learning now that it's the leftover manna. So to each the Shabbos, some of the Shabbos fare that still remains in the Shabbos meals at this meal is certainly appropriate. For that was the original, that's the origin of eating the meal on Matzoy Shabbat. But again, we should stress that there are beautiful songs that are sung traditionally at this meal. Different melodies, but the custom, the widespread custom is a beautiful poem song that goes through the whole Hebrew alphabet. And the refrain is, Al tira avdi Yaakov, do not fear my servant Jacob. Going now into the week, and so with hesitation, some trepidation, do not fear, on the contrary. The mission is to illuminate the week, and we will do so. It's traditional to tell Hasidic stories at this meal that inspire the heart and stir the soul. And it's a very precious time, as we're appreciating. And now we can understand why the Rebbe didn't compromise on this meal, because this meal perhaps represents the whole mission that the Rebbe undertook. When he undertook the leadership of Chabad, he made a declaration to the effect that we are the seventh generation from the founder of Chabad. In the same way that Moses was the seventh generation from the first Jew, Abraham. And as our sages tell us, Moses was the one that brought the divine presence down to earth, that generation through the giving of the Torah and the building of the sanctuary for God, so too shall we. This post-Holocaust generation has been charged with a mission and empowered with a mission to end the exile and bring about the great and eternal Sabbath. Hence, this meal is so precious, for this is the meal that is the link between Shabbos and the weekday. Have a wonderful week.